Today is Tuesday, April the 5th, 96th day of the new year. Joining us this morning, meteorologist in charge of what? We're not really sure, Troy Nicolini.
Thank you.
Is there like a comma or a hyphen and then it says what you're in charge of? Like Woodley Island?
National Weather Service in Eureka.
Okay. Yeah. The fiefdom?
Just our little building with 23 people. That's it.
Probably is more than enough most days.
You'd be surprised.
Yeah. No. It'd be confirmation, man.
No, I mean, you know, especially a sunny day like today, how much weather forecasting can there be? But remember, we do a lot of programs that folks don't necessarily use unless they're a specialist, like a pilot or a wildland firefighter. But you need to get on with
it. So you're not going out to the beach and measuring riptides and currents and size of waves and the size of the sand.
Well, that would be doing exactly the opposite of what we counsel people to do. Stay back.
Well, you got to make sure somebody's out there keeping people safe.
Right, right.
Yeah. Oh, boy. Our quote this morning comes from, oh, boy. It's a Ukrainian proverb. You ready for this? Want a Welsh proverb?
I'm on the edge of my chair.
Your choice, Welsh or Ukrainian? I'll give you a choice.
Welsh.
All right. Misfortune comes by 40s. That's kind of frightening, isn't it? Not by threes, but by 40s. I'm sure it's not a reference to age, because we both smoked that one a long time ago.
Yeah, blew right past 40. That seems like something a Welshman would say, though.
Yeah. So in our first segment here, we're kind of halfway limited with the time. How'd the tsunami test go a couple of weeks ago? Was it as smooth as what you had hoped for?
It went very smoothly this year. And you know, we identify problems every year, and that's the purpose behind the test. We want to find those problems during a test, not the real emergency. So we found a few things. We fixed them, got great response from the public, and all of our wonderful media partners were right there in the game with us, so it went well.
How many people that are not from the coast are familiar with the Horns? Steve and I had a discussion because I was up in Brookings Wednesday. I said, yeah, okay, we do the Horn testing every month, so it's no big deal.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and then I was flashing down to here where it doesn't happen every month. And it's a little bit different dynamic. And we have so many people who are either not within the sound range or who aren't from the coast coming through.
Right.
Is a horn a universal warning sign?
That's a great question. We have a new staff member who came from tornado country. And this was her first annual test. And it put chills in the back of her neck because she thought tornado. And it took an adjustment for her to realize, oh, yeah, this is not a tornado warning test. This is a tsunami warning test. Humboldt County is going to start doing monthly tests of the tsunami sirens, which will be good because that serves as a reminder for people who maybe move into the area from outside the coastal area. They hear the siren. They're going to ask their neighbor, hey, what's that? It's the tsunami siren. We test it every month. So it'll be a conversation starter, kind of like a coffee table book.
Well, you know. Takes everything to make it all come together.
But you asked, your question brings up a really important point. We do get complaints every year from folks who say, I can't hear the siren. Well, the sirens have a really small area that they're useful for, which is recreational venues, beaches, the marina. So they're not really for people who are in their homes. In fact, they don't work well if you're inside your home. But we tested them carefully.
Can you imagine how many horns you'd need? If you had to put them inside of everybody's
home. They're one of many systems we use, and each system has its area where it works best, and sirens are best for people who are outdoors at the beach or on the waterfront.
That would make sense. Yeah, right there. Yeah. You can feel the spray of the ocean.
Yeah. And only where there's a concentration of people, because our coastline is long and sparsely populated, so we can't put them all the way along the coast, just in certain areas.
A lot of horns.
Yeah.
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:19.
You've never heard us before, because we're something brand new. It's called Destination Radio. If you live in Ferndale or Gold Beach, Blue Lake or Klamath, Brookings or Eureka, you'll be looking for someplace different to take the family, something special to do next weekend. The best destinations for day trips and overnights, for hiking or biking, for beachcombing or birdwatching, and you'll turn to us for ideas, because you're the reason we're here, to help you find your close-to-home destination. Stay, play, and relax with us. Destination Radio.
Good morning, KINS. News and Information Time is 8:23. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Troy Nicolini. Troy, it's kind of curious that a weather guy wants to talk about abalone diving. I could understand if that was your purple passion, but I understand things that float in the water that spring leaks is more of your area of passion than getting all the way down to the bottom of the ocean.
Yes. The only time I personally dive is to clean the bottom of my sailboat.
Yeah, okay.
But abalone diving is a very popular sport in parts of Humboldt County and much of Mendocino County and points farther south.
Yeah, Fort Bragg, Mendocino.
Yeah, it's huge. Yeah. But it's really startling how many people die abalone diving every year. And I tried to find some numbers before I came here today to see maybe like how many people die NASCAR racing or bungee jumping. And I found a few numbers, but I couldn't find anything for ab diving. But when you look at how few people actually practice ab diving, and we lose 5 to 7 people every year, it seems like a pretty darn lethal sport. Now, I don't want to turn people off of ab diving, but our role as a weather office is to help people understand the kind of weather conditions that they should be thinking about. Makes for good ab diving versus dangerous ab diving.
So is it the weather system moving in, causing the waves to act a little bit differently, or the water currents to act differently?
That is
the issue, or is it the changing seasons?
That's a great question. So there's a few different kinds of combinations of weather conditions that get people in trouble ab diving. But in general, if there's a storm far, far away that sends waves to our coast, but there's no storm locally, you can have a wonderful, beautiful day with light wind, and the ocean can seem very inviting, but those waves that are coming from far away can make the conditions dangerous at that interface between land and water. So
you won't necessarily see something, you know, large breakers or the
rooster
tails or any of that kind of stuff.
Well, it won't have like that windy kind of feeling like when the waves are choppy and white cappy. That says, you know, danger. But on the days I'm talking about, the ocean can look pretty benign. But it just so happens when the waves come from far away, when they arrive on our shore, they come in pulses. So they can come with 5, 10, even 20 minutes of quiet waves, followed by a short, intense period of bigger waves. So if you're an ab diver and you're not really aware of that, you can look at the ocean and say, oh, it looks great. Go ahead and get around a point near a shallow area. When those bigger waves come, they can really fatigue that diver. And fatigue, a combination of fatigue and weather conditions are often a factor in the fatalities we see.
We used to hear in the forecast swells.
Yeah. Oh, you had to go there, huh?
Does that term still exist?
It does. We experimented with moving away from that term, but that would fill a whole radio show in by itself. So I'm very...
Well, I'm thinking, you know, if you're being a seal, so your head's bobbing out of the water, and now the swells start coming in, and it's like 18-foot swells.
Right.
You know you're in the middle of something. It's a 2-foot swell. Okay, you know, it's just kind of the waves coming through.
And what we give people now instead of the word swell is the interval between the waves. And it turns out that's the number that really matters.
You know, how many more letters that is?
Well, you know, so for example, a 10-foot high swell can be a wave that's really dangerous in deep water or a wave that's safe in deep water. And a 10-foot high swell can be safe in shallow water or dangerous in shallow water. It's all dependent on the interval between the waves. So we used to say 10-foot swell. Well, is it a 10-foot by 10-second swell? In which case, it's a very different wave than a 10-foot by 20-second wave. And people who spend time around the water actually know that. They really put a lot of value on hearing the interval. And so we just decided to use our time to tell you the interval and drop that meaningless word swell. So that's why you don't hear it anymore.
Yeah, but I can recite the forecast in my mind from decades.
People originally that were really comfortable with the word swell didn't like our change. But now that we're a few years into it, everybody I've talked to is really supportive. They like it. They've trained their mind to think about the interval and to drop that word that in the past could have almost fooled them into misunderstanding the wave conditions.
It sounds like both of them are critical components. If you're seeing seven breakers, hitting the shore, okay. That's a different dynamic than having two or three.
Right, and it turns out we know that the longer the interval between waves, the more likely we're going to get that set behavior where the waves will come in pulses of big, higher waves followed by periods of quiet.
So it's almost an indicator.
It's an indicator, yeah, a very, very good indicator. So, for example, this last Friday was the opener of abalone season here on the coast, and we had waves that didn't sound that big. They were only 5 feet. But they were 16 and 17 second waves. And we know that when the waves are that height with that interval, when they come on shore, they will come in sets. And that's exactly what happened. In fact, we know of a Zodiac dive boat that was capsized in the surf zone. Everybody survived. They lost all their dive gear. The Coast Guard had to come help them. That's a classic indicator that there was set behavior. Because you get your boat in the water, you think you're ready to go. It looks pretty calm. Everybody's on board. And you start going around a shallow area. And one of those sets comes in, capsizes the boat. Because when the set comes in, the waves break a lot farther off the beach because they feel the seafloor earlier. So it can really get you in trouble.
You'll see the breakers out further.
Yeah. In fact, here's how you can see a set behavior kind of day. If you ever look at the beach and you see surfers out there, and they're paddling, they're sitting on their surfboards, but they seem to be outside the breakers. And as a casual observer, it's easy to look at that and say, don't those surfers realize the waves are breaking closer in? They're just sitting there 5-10 minutes sitting out in this deep water. Or maybe they're social, just chatting with each other. It just doesn't seem to make sense visually when you see them way outside of where the waves are breaking, waiting for the waves. Like, hey, dummies, come inshore. The waves are breaking inshore. But if you wait 15 minutes, the set will come in, and the waves actually break outside of where the surfers are. And they know that because they've been watching. So that's a great little lesson for someone who doesn't really understand set behavior. Just watch some surfers on the right kind of day for about 20 to 30 minutes, and you'll start to see that pattern.
It's a good reason to hang out on the beach, too.
Well, there's a lot of reasons to hang out on the beach, but that's one of them.
Okay, one that I can understand and fully embrace. How's that?
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, I'm not going to go tide pool. I've touched my fair share of starfish, man.
Yeah.
KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:30. We'll be back with more from Troy Nicolini.
What could we do as a community to make Humboldt a better place to work and live? The answer is to make sure our kids are literate, able to plan financially, move forward in their education so they are better prepared to enter our workforce, and become contributing and productive members in our society, community, and economy. How do we do it? Through the Decade of Difference Initiative. Visit decadeofdifference.org and find out how you, as a parent, student, or business owner, can help. It's the Decade of Difference. Be part of it.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:35. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with meteorologist in charge of everything weather-wise on the... No, okay. Eureka Weather Station. Troy Nicolini.
Thanks for having me.
And give you the impressive title, too. Yeah. In charge of many, control of none.
A lot of people struggle with that title. Like, what is that exactly does that mean?
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh. That means that you're the guy that... picks up the phone at
right.
the end of the whole process.
Yeah.
Okay. Talk Shop's presented by CH Painting and by Redeck. Troy, what is the biggest challenge this time of the year? I think for those of us that have been here a couple of years, okay, let's see, April, does it have an R in it? Okay, are mussels okay to eat or not okay to eat? You know, some of those types of things. Are we going to have the algae blooms in the rivers this year, okay, not a little too early. I mean, some of those kinds of things, it's almost like a rite of passage into spring.
Well, you know, it's true, and I think in the past you could sort of like hang your hat on some of those seasonal variations, but with the really warm water, you know, crab season never opened up north of Cape Mendocino. So we've had a really bizarre year, and I would recommend that folks check the shellfish hotline before they eat any shellfish, regardless of what month it is and whether there's an R in it or not. Because I think all bets are off, at least for the past year we've had. What we need is some really nice, strong northwest winds that this spring and early summer to turn over the ocean and get some cold water up. It's the warm water that really causes the problems with all the things you mentioned, the algae blooms and the domoic acid.
The what?
The domoic acid. That's what was...
Domoic?
Domoic, yeah.
What is it? I heard a lot of people talk
well,
about
it's,
it. What is it?
I believe it's a byproduct of... I'm a physical scientist, not a biologist, so that's my disclaimer. But I'm guessing it's the byproduct of an algal bloom that's in the ocean that the crabs eat, and then they bioconcentrate it because they're eating a lot of stuff, and each little thing they eat might have a little teeny bit of it, and then they bioconcentrate it. And then if we eat it, you know, you eat six... I know you probably eat six Dungeness crabs when you sit down, so if you eat six crabs, you've got six times whatever they had in... That's it. Could
good
be really
thing
bad.
I'm bigger than six times their size. Now, yeah. Why? So it's the water temperature. So that's why Newport and Florence and the guys up north were able to go out and get the crab.
Their water cooled off faster enough to get rid of the problem quicker, right? And it's the northwest winds that caused the deep cold ocean water to come from the bottom of the ocean up to our coastal surface areas. And so, like the average person who's an avid fisher person, man or woman around here, they hate the north.
Is that regional capitulation to PC?
That's so they sort of hate the northwest winds. I mean, most people on land just plain hate the northwest winds. It's just so windy, you know. It's But they also know they're important to get the whole food web working right. And so, you know, the average person who likes to fish will tell you, I sure hope we have those really strong north winds here in the spring and summer, even though, you know, we all kind of hate them too.
So are winds an indicator of anything other than wind?
The wind is an indicator that somewhere you have high pressure and somewhere you have low pressure, and the wind is trying to balance those two out. I mean, that's, you know, that's basically, think of wind like if you have a car up on a mountain and the brakes are broken, it rolls downhill. And so if you've got air that's in a high pressure area, it finds a low pressure area and it wants to go there. And high pressure and low pressure in the atmosphere is just like a hill and a valley on the road. So that's what you're getting, is a speeding car traveling from high pressure to low.
And the stronger the winds,
the higher the high pressure and the lower the low pressure. And that's the
taller the mountain.
Exactly, right. That's the setup we get starting about now. In fact, we have it happening over the next few days where we get the Pacific high out in the ocean and we get a thermal low over land, and those two create our winds. So we're going to have possibly gale force winds in the marine waters. So most people who want to fish this summer are happy about that.
Simple dude, right?
Yeah.
If there's fog, okay, there's no breeze. If there's breeze, then there's stuff going on.
Mm-hmm.
No fog, water's moving a little bit. Is that an oversimplistic?
No, they're related. In fact, this northwest wind I'm describing that pulls up that cold ocean water to the surface, so the water stays warm offshore. And what you get after that wind happens is you get warmer water offshore, cold water right at the coast.
And kind of coming in underneath the warm water.
Exactly, and it comes up at the beach. And that's why we'll get water 46, 47 degrees at the coast, and it's 60 degrees offshore. So now once you have that set up that the wind caused, now air that's moving off the ocean can travel over that warm water, pick up a bunch of moisture, and guess what it does when it hits that cold band of water? The moisture precipitates out as fog.
El Nino?
So that moisture comes out as fog, and that's why we get the fog. And so the wind kind of sets things up to give you fog.
So the wind has that much influence on the water?
Huge influence, yeah.
That's interesting, if we're in a sailboat, we try to get the sail out as big as we can into the wind to have as much drag coefficient.
Right, right.
I don't see a lot of things in the water there that are the equivalents of little fins sticking up trying to...
No, you're right. Intuitively, it doesn't seem like the wind would grip the water that much, but it creates waves, and the waves present those little sails, you might say. And it pushes those, and the wind has so much an effect on the water. It's also what gives us redwoods, and everything about the climate here on land is largely a result of that north wind. Is that fog I just described? That's what feeds the redwoods in the summer and allows that species to live here. And we happen to get that wind more than anywhere else on the West Coast, pretty much right here between Cape Blanco and Cape Mendocino is the windiest part of the coast in the summertime, which is why that's the remnant of the redwood territory. You know, they're not. They used to cover a much bigger area, and it's shrunk down just to that footprint.
So you're saying it's wind-related?
Yep, totally.
Not the logging industry. Thank you very much. KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:42. He's going to be thinking about that one for a long time. We'll be back with more from Troy.
What's the shopping show all about?
If you haven't listened to the show before, it's kind of tough to describe.
I guess the easiest first step is to simply go to the Shopping Show website.
TheShoppingShow.net.
And join us this Saturday for the next Shopping Show.
On KINS 106.3 FM.
KURY FM 95.3 and 101.3 in the Illinois Valley.
And KEKA 101.5 and 100.9 in Eureka. Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:44. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Troy Nicolini. Troy, some of the different concepts that people have a tough time wrestling with, I would think that you've probably boiled a lot of them down to those simple analogies like the car in the mountain. That's pretty straightforward. What are some of the areas that most of us outside of the island don't really grasp, don't have a 100% full understanding of, that are some of the more simple basic concepts that you guys work with all the time?
For some reason, I just can't think of any.
You went blank. 80% chance of rain.
Oh, probability is a tough one, yeah. I know, and it isn't just weather probabilities. You know, people talk about the 100-year flood, and so you have insurance against it. Wow, I'm only going to live to be about 70, so what have I got to worry about? Probabilities are funny. Like when 100%, 100-year recurrence interval for a flood means you have 1% chance of hitting that flood every year. So every year that clicks by, your chances add up. So you actually have a 1 in 4 chance of getting flooded by the 100-year flood during a 30-year mortgage. So that sounds a lot more.
So it is a cumulative. It's not each year standalone.
Right, exactly. Okay. And so it's probabilities are really can be misleading. So you're right. I think a lot of folks, and we tend to actually downplay the probability. So when we say 50% chance of rain, people think, that's not too bad. I got a 50% chance of no rain, which seems pretty good. So in fact, my agency is looking at trying to find better ways to explain probability to the average person because it's not a very intuitive concept. So that is
put it on a lottery card. Everybody will get it like that.
Well, sometimes you hear the lottery referred to as a special tax for the mathematically challenged because the odds of getting that lottery ticket are really small.
Yeah, teeny. I read something or heard something recently, I think it was last week, that was saying the way the information is presented really can have a huge impact.
Right.
If you say 50% chance for cloudy.
Yeah.
Or partly cloudy skies.
Yeah.
Versus partly sunny skies.
Right.
That, over a period of time, that is enough to change. I forget where they test marketed this somewhere. And it was just enough that it really did have a positive impact.
Oh, yeah. And then, interesting, a lot of people get their weather on their phones. I mean, not me, of course. Okay, I do. My phone has a little picture that pops up on my calendar. And it has a sun. And it has a little gray cloud that covers it. And so, you know, and then sometimes raindrops. So now we're switching to words, and words are really, I mean, images are really powerful for people. And if you follow us on Facebook, which I hope you do, you'll see even bigger, more complex images to try to explain what the weather's going to do in ways.
Smiley sun and frown.
Exactly.
Sun.
Yeah. So images can be a lot more intuitive for people, I think. So we're still going to use words. I'm a big believer in words. I love words, but we're matching them up with images that are more intuitive. Even for probability, there's ways you can use images to make it more logical.
You're not saying that a lot of the people who follow the NOAA website can't read, are you?
No, I'm saying that words and images together are the best combination.
When presented by sound.
Right. Yeah, that's right. We're on radio.
I was waiting for you to step across the line there.
Sorry,
you just
weren't
going to do it.
Like I said, a great you can't beat a great radio voice.
Yeah, let me know when you find one, huh? We'll work on that one a little bit. But it is interesting, people's perceptions of what the reality is.
Yeah.
You know, and it seems so basic, but maybe because it's so basic, we don't pay any attention.
Well, that's just the raw information about weather. Then there's how people make decisions about their exposure to risk. Everybody has their different sort of reaction and response and assessment of risk. And really, if you think about why we're giving weather information, we're hoping folks make decisions to stay safe. And when you look at most people die from floods, die trying to drive through a flooded road, it's clear that their assessment of the danger in the moment is what's failing them, not necessarily a bad forecast.
Do you think the stuff that like the Weather Channel has where they've got these storm chasers, is that encouraging people to or sharing information?
I think many of those programs are really good at elevating people's understanding of the weather phenomenon. And, you know, the idea of encouraging people to be a storm chaser, I'm not sure if they do that. You're either wired to be a storm chaser or you're not.
Or you have an IQ.
Yeah. No, I mean, we have people on my staff that have storm chased in the past. They don't do it now because they're working out here and there's not. It's kind of hard to chase our storms.
Kind of get a little wet.
Yeah.
Thanks for coming by.
Sure. My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
See you tomorrow morning.